All right, I'm not your speaker tonight, but I have the privilege of introducing our speaker, our guest speaker for the evening. I know him originally from playing basketball, because that's one of my hobbies, even if it doesn't look like it with my 5'5 height. I play basketball with Adrian Gerber. I asked him to come up. He works for Young Life. You met Sarah Merritt last month, who also works for Young Life. And Adrian here is the Leadership Development Director of Young Life. And I was told to introduce Young Life as it's UCM, but for teenagers. So without further ado, it's Adrian.
Perfect. Thanks, Josh. Josh and I play basketball together. We never check each other because we're in different height categories. So, but he occasionally steals the ball from me because he's down there stealing balls. Anyways, you guys have been in a series. If you've been here the last couple of weeks, I have found out and listened online. It's called Everyone Multiplying Disciples Everywhere. And the idea of how in your everyday actions, you have the opportunity to multiply the love and hope of Jesus everywhere. Is it okay if I move? Stuff around? Perfect. That's what I'm going to do. So Josh looked at the Great Commission, and he's sort of expanded on those words of the theme, and looked at what does that mean, living it out at UBCO. Then Alex Marriott was here last week, and I understand that we sang this week, and you had pizza last week. So I love singing. Singing's great. Pizza is also very good. So I feel like I missed out. But he was talking about what it means to be a royal priesthood and how our lives can be a foretaste of heaven as we live them. And that's a pretty cool message. And then James invited me to come speak, and Josh did not veto it with his new power in his role. So that was nice. I guess I wasn't mean on the basketball court or something. But I think James, when he asked me, I think he invited me based on a little bit of what I do. And that's both in my life, but also with Young Life. But what I do really comes from the way I see. I think in most cases, our actions are a result of our, whether you call it your paradigm or your perspective or your worldview, how you see things starts to really inform how you live. And I think that's true for me. And here's a little bit about me. So Young Life is the organization I worked for. I actually became a Christian through Young Life, was a volunteer leader, and then I've been on staff for over 20 years. It is a worldwide Christian outreach mission. It's where adults enter the world of teens and focus on what matters to them the most, fun, friendship, adventure, and a sense of significance. And we do so, in doing so, we earn the right to tell them about something we think's most important, and that's God and his love for us. And so that's a quick snapshot of Young Life. If you want more, I brought little brochures, and you could go check that out. But that's what we do, and a few things that Young Life shapes me and how I see the world is, it's a lot about going as an adult and risking to go into the world of teens, whatever that looks like, heading out, hang out in the high school, the middle school, something like that. It also means, like, it's going into their world. That's really critical to sort of what, how I've grown up doing ministry. And we have this thing that we say we take God really seriously, but we try not to take ourselves very seriously. That's a phrase of kind of how we want to be. And so that shapes how I see it. And this picture is just me hanging out with some middle school age kids, and they have a lot of sharp objects. So we paused for a picture, and then we took the sharp objects back or let them throw them at the axe target. That was a good time. Anyways, so that's a little bit of me. And the other piece of me, maybe worth mentioning, I have a family. We moved to the Okanagan in Kelowna in 2011. And so that was our little family that year. I think that was the fall of that year. And then this super whitewashed picture that you can just see silhouettes of, that's my family now. And there's a third kid there. So we've been living here, 13 years now. And one of the things that happened, first of all, clearly we like the Okanagan because all our family photos are taken in orchards and vineyards. But one of the things that happened just before we moved here is there was a friend I had a colleague, worked in Young Life, and he was telling me about stuff he was doing and the kind of relationships he was building in his neighborhood. And I thought, this was really fascinating. I kept asking him questions. We had a meal together, talking more. And one of the things he said to me, he goes, yeah, Adrian, I just decided to really get to know the people in my neighborhood. I just really decided. And I was like, hey, yeah, and tell me more and more. And he had all these great stories. And then he said this. He's like, I mean, Adrian, what if Jesus meant it when he said, love your neighbor? Like, what if he actually meant your neighbor? And that was one of those, you know, those like brain worms or something. Like, he stuck that in there, and I just couldn't stop thinking about it. And it just started working around and making me think, how am I living my life, and how does that shape how I live my life? And I'll tell you more, but when we moved, my wife and I, we said, hey, we really want to move into a neighborhood, and we're going to move into that neighborhood. We're going to get to know our neighbors. That's how we want to be. When we look for a church to be at, it has to be one that's in our neighborhood. If we can't walk to it, it's just not an option. We're going to be in our neighborhood. That was something that we decided to do. And like I said, I'll tell you some stories of what that's looked like over the years in a little bit. But before I do, there's a lot of things I want to do. First of all, I want to just say that open mic is awesome. I'm so glad that you do that, that you take time to pause and hear from each other. Thank you for those four. You know, obviously there's the awkward pause before you come up. Does anybody actually want to do it and come up? And then you decide to. So thank you for your vulnerability. I just also love that you're sharing stories about how you're seeing God in your world. I think that's awesome. And if I'm going to do anything here tonight, I'm just going to try and expand that if I can, to from seeing God in your world to seeing God in the whole world, in all the world, so that you can start living into that reality in the world and doing that with all the people around you. The passage we're going to look at tonight, which is a favorite of mine, is Colossians 4, verse 2 to 6. And it's really like a tag on at the end of a letter kind of passage. However, as I've read it, first couple times I read it, I thought, this is pretty insightful. And it's a great wrap-up of this letter that Paul writes to the Colossians, which is one of my favorite books of the Bible or letters of Paul. And he says this, and it's not a throwaway couple verses that's just like, nice wrap-up, and we're done. There's some things that I think we can really take. They're insightful for what it means to share the hope and love of Jesus with people around us. So let me read that. Devote yourselves to prayer, being watchful and thankful. And pray for us too, that God may open a door for our message so that we may proclaim the mystery of Christ, for which I am in chains. Pray that I may proclaim it clearly, as I should. Be wise in the way you act towards outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversations be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. We're going to look at this bit by bit. So let's look at that first one. Devote yourselves to prayer, being watchful and thankful. I love just this. I love when the Bible, maybe I need simple instructions. Maybe that's who I am. So I love when it just breaks it down to like, here's three things. And be like, that's a good number. I can remember three. Devote yourselves to prayer. Be connected with God. Just do it. Be connected with God. Be watchful. Have your eyes open to the world around you. And be thankful. And when it comes to Paul, he says this word thankful a lot. He says it in the previous chapter three times where he talks about it. It's like he can't stop talking about it. And so there's this picture, be connected to God, aware of your world, and receive it all with gratitude. It's like life is this gift that God is giving you. And it's the people. It's the opportunities you have. It's the mountains. It's in the books. It's in UCM. It's at UBC. All of this is a gift. And he's saying, be attentive to that. Recognize that. Paul describes this idea of being tuned in and delighted in what we have. Attentive to all God's good around you. And it might come, as we said, you might see it in the mountains or trials, the voice of a friend, a book that you find in the library, or a song. But it's all around us. And the context of that kind of expression, that kind of like, hey, be attentive to God's good. If you look in Colossians chapter 1, Paul was talking about it. He's talking about Jesus saying he's the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of over all creation. And then he says this, for by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. That's a lot of things. That's kind of all of them. And he's saying, it's all of it. It's all this great gift. Pay attention. God, Jesus, is infused, is holding together all of these things. God is this eternal mystery, as we said. He's this eternal mystery that enables, enlivens, and enfolds all things. And he's saying, be attentive to that. Be attentive to God's good everywhere. So then we go on to verse 3 and 4. He says, and pray for us too that God may open a door for our message, though that we may proclaim the mystery of Christ, for which I am in chains. So Paul, if you don't know this, he wrote the letter to the Colossians while in prison. And so Paul just said, be devoted to prayer, watchful, and thankful. And then, oh yeah, and by the way, reminder, I'm in prison. Just this little reminder. But he doesn't say, oh man, and it's really hard to be in prison. He doesn't do that. He says, oh, could you pray for us? Because I think there's an opportunity right here. I've got my eyes open, and God, I think, is doing something right here in this prison. Can you imagine that? A Roman prison? I don't know a lot. Some of you probably take history, and you know more than I do about Roman prisons. I've learned some things, but I'm pretty sure they're mostly about suffering and punishment and sin and crime and criminal and death. It'd be pretty hard pressed for a guard to walk in and be like, I think God's at work here. And Paul's not a guard. He's the prisoner. And he's like, hey guys, pray for me. I think God's at work here. How cool is that? He's being a living example to us while in chains of being prayerful, watchful, thankful. Then he goes and he says this, I proclaim the mystery of Christ for which I am in chains. Pray that I may proclaim it clearly. What does that mean? The message, proclaim it clearly. As I look at Paul's life and I look at the kind of things Paul says in his letters, but even more so when he's speaking to people as we have the benefit of reading in Acts, Paul seems to think that proclaiming it clearly is when his receivers, the people listening, hear it and say, well, that's good news. That's what proclaiming it clearly looks like. The mystery of Christ, the unknown God being made known to you, to me, and everyone else in the world, no exceptions. So when I think about that, I think whatever is good news to me about Jesus and about the gospel, that has to transcend me. And that has to extend out to the people around me and to the whole world. It needs to sound like good news to my neighbor. If the gospel is just good news to me, if it's just good news to Christians, it's not really that good news. It's good news for everyone. That's good news. That's what he says. Proclaiming it clearly. That's what that means. And again, context, Colossians. Actually, I like the way the message puts this. It's talking about Jesus. And he says, this is how he describes it. He says, so spacious is he, so roomy, that everything of God finds its proper place in him without crowding. Not only that, but all the broken and dislocated pieces of the universe, people and things, animals and atoms, get properly fixed and fit together in vibrant harmonies, all because of his death, that his blood that poured out down from the cross. So spacious and roomy is he. All the things, all the people are brought together. That's the picture. The God who proclaims to everything and every you, you matter, you belong, I love you, everything, everyone. And just as Paul says, let's proclaim that message. Let's proclaim it clearly to everyone and all things. Proclaim it with our words, but even with our lives, as we should, as Paul says, as we should. So moving on to verse 5 and 6. Be wise in the way you act towards outsiders, it says. Be wise in the way you act towards outsiders. What is wise? Well, here's one of my thoughts as I read this and as I watch Paul. Is like, stop calling them outsiders. That's probably a good start. And definitely don't treat them like outsiders. That's wise when you're acting towards outsiders. Don't major on distinction. We have words, and we might have heard, and maybe we use these words, but maybe we shouldn't when we're thinking about outsiders, whether it's pagan or Gentile or non-Christian or secular. It describes this non-God space that, as we look at Colossians, he's like, he's in and through, he's made all things, he's holding them all together. Stop thinking about it as not God's space. Don't use words that make you think that God isn't there. That's not helpful. It's not true of what the gospel is and what God is. He's everywhere. He's in all of these things. And it others people. And that doesn't help. It's kind of weird. There's plenty of examples of it in the Bible. There's a biblical precedent for it, you might say, but it's not the direction of the Bible. The Bible is not in the direction of distinction. It takes distinction, and it's moving towards reconciliation. And if we look at the life of Jesus, it's not about distinction. He went and found distinct people, and he kept reconciling them, making them one, saying, no, no, this person's in. That's the direction. Paul talks a lot about the ministry of reconciliation. I noticed he doesn't talk about the ministry of division and distinction, ever. So if God moves from distinction to reconciliation, so should we. Quick story. I was actually at James's, if you know James. I've forgotten. He oversees, UCM over BC. Okay, regional director of UCM in British Columbia. There we go. He's my friend, and I don't know his job title. Anyways, I was over at his house. This is quite a few years ago, and he lives generally in my neighborhood. I have to walk across the road and a baseball field and then through a couple streets to get to my house. As I'm going through the field, I'm just going home, and I got to go make dinner, and the family's going to chase after me once the dinner's made. And as I cross the field, there's this guy, and he comes up to me, and he's holding a Bible. I didn't know this at first, but he's just coming up to me. He clearly wants to talk to me because he has that look. And then I see he's holding a Bible, and I'm like, okay, what's this going to be? And then he says, hi, sir, I just want to know if you're a Christian. And I was like, okay, yes, I am. Is this good? I don't know. We're going to find out. And he goes, and were you baptized? And I go, yeah, actually, I was. But I'm already like, this is weird. Like, this is not what you do when you're walking in an empty baseball field, I don't think. And he goes, were you baptized? Yes, yes, I was. And I was a little reluctant about answering that question. And he goes, when they baptized you, did they say, in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit? Or did they say, in the name of Jesus? And at this point, I was like, I think I've been in these conversations before, and I want to get out. Like, this is not a good conversation. And I'm thinking to myself, this is weird, right? This is weird. I'm a follower of Jesus. Like, I read that thing that you're holding, the Bible. I have one. I read it. I know that verse. I know where you got it from. Like, I'm in. Like, we're in. And yet, this does not feel good. This is weird. And so I, like most people, was just like, yeah, I got to go cook dinner or whatever. Like, I just got to move on. And I went on. But as I thought about it, it bugged me. It's still bugging me. I'm talking about it today. I thought, you know what? I wish I stopped. I wish I stopped and turned around and said, hey, I appreciate what you're doing, but could you just be normal? Could you just be normal? And like, for Jesus' sake, it would be great. Like, just don't be weird. And that will be better because I'm in. And we could, I hope I'm the only person you ever did this to, but I don't think you are. That was the ministry of distinction. I don't know. He was trying to split something and make sure, but it wasn't the ministry of reconciliation. And it was weird. And weird isn't wise. When we're trying to be wise in the way we act toward outsiders, don't be weird. So that's my next tip. Be normal. Don't be weird. I think Paul would agree. That's my summary of being wise in the way you act towards outsiders. Now he goes on to say, make the most of every opportunity. Go back to that verse that he said. What if Jesus meant it when he said, love your neighbor? Love your neighbor. It's not rocket science. It's, you know, go talk to someone, get to know them, be interested in them, learn about them, hang out, become friends, build a relationship, value them, include them, make them feel like they belong. And along the way, you discover that you didn't bring God into the situation. God was there the whole time. He was there. He was around them. He was in their life. You might even discover he was in them in ways that you didn't even know were possible. Just love them. Humans are made for connection. Again, you're in university. I've been there. It's been a while, but I'm pretty sure anthropology keeps pointing at humans are made for connection. I'm pretty sure history points at that. Psychology points the importance of human connection. Biblically, it's pointing at we're made for human connection. It's the most normal thing we could do. Sometimes because it was COVID a few years ago, or sometimes because technology gets in the way, or we just kind of get awkward about it. Sometimes that normal can get a little weird, and breaking through can be a little weird. I'll give you an example. Back to my neighborhood. So in my neighborhood, my school that my kids go to, or elementary school that they've gone to for 13 years, my last one's just about to finish there, I walked my kids to school for 12 of those years. The grade 6 kid said, that's enough, we're good. So we're not doing that anymore. But I walked to school. And as I walked to school, I met people because they were walking their kid to school. And I'd just chat with them because, you know, after you see him 20 times, might as well have a chat because this is a 5-minute walk there and back to school. So I started chatting. I met this guy. His name was John. And we just chat. And our kids were both in kindergarten, different classes. Anyways, John's a nice guy. I met this guy, Dave. Chatted him up a bit. His kids were a year older and 2 years older. So that was cool. And got to know Dave. And then one time I was walking with John and I saw Dave. And I go, oh, hey, Dave. Hey, have you met John? And they laughed because they're brothers. So that was an embarrassing little moment that was maybe a little bit weird, but it was good because we laughed and we got together in that laughing and told more stories. And later that year, I was like, I had found out in all these conversations that John liked hiking. I liked hiking and we both had a kid. And I was like, I always want to take my kid hiking. Like, I think he's ready. Do you want to go hiking? And we went hiking. It was awesome. But before that happened, that's right. Before that happened, I was like, I keep walking to school and John's walking to school, but that's kind of all we got. We got the walks to school. So yeah, this is definitely before the hike thing happened. I was like, how do you, I gotta go to the next level here, right? How do I do that? And I was like, well, I know where he lives because I see him going to his house when he walks home. So on Saturday afternoon, I went over to his house with my kid because I needed backup, a wingman. And I said, hey, John, my kid Jackson and I, we're going to go for a bike ride down to the park and just play. He's going to play on the park downtown. Do you want to come? And I got to admit, I felt a little weird because I was like, am I 6 years old? I was mid 30s and I was like, this feels like a play date. Am I too old for a play date in the neighborhood? But I decided to push through that weirdness and just risk it. And John and I went and hung out. We had a great chat. Then, fast forward, you know, by that time, we now know we like hiking, and we go on a hike together. John is now, for without a doubt, my best friend. Josh knows him. He comes to basketball sometimes because he also does that. We found that out, with that we share that. But we became great friends. And so sometimes you need to be weird. And that's number three. So be normal. Don't be weird. But be a little weird in the normal ways. Be weird in the ways that build relationships. Be fun. Take a risk. Do the thing that's a little bit nerve-wracking, but it's about human connection. Then I'd be like, that's a good kind of weird. And I've continued that. I got encouraged by that. So I do these things. We were doing front yard movies. Part of that was I wasn't really doing it purposely, except that the sun went down on the backside of our house. So the only way we could see the thing where kids could be awake at like 9 and it's just getting dark, we do a front yard movie. But the fun part about front yard movies is people are walking by and you're like, hey, I know you, neighbor. Come join us for the movie. We're midway through Star Wars and, you know, Darth Vader's about to appear and that's fun. So let's do that and have some popcorn. So we would do that. We started hanging out with our neighbors more and more, having meals together, doing parties. My neighbor across the street, we really got to know each other. They are great at hosting parties. So we hang out at their house. They do Super Bowl parties and Christmas parties. And I don't know, they just make excuses to have parties. It's great. So that's been fun. We got talking and we're like, no, it's weird. It's weird that we all live so isolated, hey? Like everybody needs a lawnmower to mow their lawn once or twice a week or three times if you're neglectful. And he's like, yeah. Yeah, we shouldn't do that. We should have like a shared lawnmower, but we already had a lawnmower, but we didn't have a shop vac. So we bought a shop vac together. And now when we need it, we go grab it. Or when they need it, they come grab it because we don't give it back because it's ours in the neighborhood shop vac. So it's a little bit weird, but it actually makes sense. It's normal. And all this hanging out actually turned into something bigger. When COVID hit and you couldn't hang out, but then all of a sudden you kind of could, if you remember that time. We couldn't do anything, but you could do stuff outside. So I was like, we got to do something. We're bored. So I was like, I do Young Life. We do camp sometimes. I'm just going to do my own family camp in my neighborhood. So we did one. I think this was the little postcard that I gave out afterwards. This is us doing a little Blondo family camp. Blondo is the name of my street. So we all, 7 of the 9 families who came live on Blondo or an adjacent street. And, yeah, we went hiking. We did a scavenger hunt using Goose Chase on an app. And we just did stuff together. And we ate a meal on the neighbor across the street. They have a big driveway. So we ate the meal there because my driveway is not big enough. And that was fun. We're just doing stuff. Next picture is see this little thing that used to be dirt and there used to be a bush, but we wanted to get rid of it for visibility. But then it was just a pile of dirt. So I was like, I know what I'm going to do. Because I'd been to Europe recently. I was fortunate enough to be in Portugal with my dad. And I was like, everybody eats on the street and it's so communal and they're hanging out. So I was like, I'm going to build a patio. So that thing, you can probably tell, it's about 2 feet by 4 feet. That's not a big patio, not luxury, but it's on the front. And we go sit there. So if you go to the next picture, I bring out a table and we go sit there and that's us hanging out in the evening and people are walking their dogs going by and I say, hey, we're doing it. And then we called it Blondo Bistro because we had food one time and it was like, it's like a Blondo Bistro. And then their daughter thought that was a fun name. So she made a sign and then I put up lights so we have light and we just hang out there sometimes. It's a little weird. People walk by and they're like, what are you doing in your front yard eating? And the answer in about 30 seconds is hanging out and talking with you. It's actually pretty normal. It's pretty sweet. So I've been learning that. Be weird in the normal things. It actually works out pretty well. Back to the scripture. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversations be always full of grace, seasoned with salt. Let your conversations always be full of grace and seasoned with salt. Always, always full of grace. Not sometimes and not just a little bit. Always full of grace. Talk like they're 100% in. Make your conversation sound like they're 100% in. There is no out that you are. You're in. That's grace. And grace is the main course. But then there's this seasoning with salt. And I never really understand what that means, but I think about salt, and it does a couple things that I'm aware of. It preserves food. and it makes the food tasty. It brings out the flavor. So I think of it as have conversations that you want to have go on a long time and that are fun. They're tasty. That's a good conversation. Have those kinds of conversations. Have fun as you're chatting with people. Talk about real stuff. Talk about what's going on. Talk about the fun adventures, the ways that you're like, man, life is awesome. But also talk about the real stuff about how life is hard. Because those are real. Talk about those things. Talk about, bring up God and faith as is normal in your conversations. You know, don't be like, I was praying in my thing and I read this in the scriptures. To someone who doesn't do that, that wouldn't be, that's weird, right? Don't, but be like, hey, there's something I read that's kind of like what you're experiencing right now. And they're like, oh yeah? And if it resonates with them, they're like, where'd you find that? Actually, it was in some letter that this guy Paul wrote. It's in the Bible, if you ever want to know. And it's just like, oh, that's neat. Let it come up naturally. Because your real stuff that's going on in your life connects to their real stuff going on in their lives. Talk about it in a way that makes them feel like it's for them, not against them. One of my favorite pictures of this is Paul. In Acts 17, he goes to Athens. And there's the first part tells you, he walks around and he sees a lot of idols. And he's pretty distressed, it says. But then he goes and talks to them. And when he says, what he says to them is this. That's better. He says, people of Athens, I see in every way you're very religious. It's kind of like a compliment. He's like, hey, you guys, you're pretty spiritual, pretty religious. That's cool. He was worried about it, but that's not how he talked. His conversations were full of grace, seasoned with salt. And he goes, man, and then I looked at this and I saw this altar that says to an unknown God, let me tell you about that God. And he says, the God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth, doesn't live in temples built by hands. And he goes on and says, God did all this. He made things, set the times for people to live so that people would seek him, reach out for them and find him. But he's not far from us. And then he says, for in him we live, move, and have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. So Paul goes and he connects with these people. He spends time, gets to know them. He's being attentive. He's being watchful. And then he goes in and he celebrates them. He congratulates them. He's curious and complimentary. He connects the gospel to what they know. He uses their poetry. He never says anything about the Hebrew scriptures. He does it in the language they know, in the poems they know. We could learn from that. Be attentive, be curious, compliment people. And when you're trying to explain the gospel, use a Drake song. I don't know how to do it yet, but I bet you can do it. Use their poetry or whatever is on the radio at the time. And that says this, so that you may know how to answer everyone. Wouldn't that be great to know how to answer everyone? Well, to answer everyone, you got to know what they're asking for. In my experience with people, the people in my neighborhood, the people I get to know with the teenagers that we get to know in Young Life, they're generally not asking for apologetics or my take on penal substitution or whether a politician is a Christian or not. They're not asking those questions. They're asking, do I belong? Is this good? Is this fun? Is there life here? They want relationships full of grace and seasoned with salt, so that they can experience inclusion and joy. That's how to answer everyone. That's the answer. It's not some perfectly said thing. It's a life lived. So last little question. I'm pretty sure Alex asked about this question. When you're doing all this, what about getting them to church? Let me just tell you from my experience, what I would say would be like, yeah, sure. If it's normal, just don't be weird about it, right? Invite them. I've invited some friends. I thought, yeah, I don't know if the thing I do at church is really where they're at yet. But you know what? They kind of like joy and hope and stuff. So we did this thing around Advent. And I said, hey, come on over. I'm going to do this little Advent. I'm going to light a candle. We're going to talk about peace, hope, joy, and love. And they're like, I'm kind of into those things. I'd be like, yeah, I bet you are. And they don't know that Jesus is pretty into those things too. Or maybe they kind of do, but they haven't been paying attention. So we get to come in and I prayed at the end. We lit a candle. We talked about those things, and I got to share my real stuff that included God. They got to share their stuff that might not have named them, but we're starting to see them in the midst. Do those things. I would go caroling with my church friends that lived in my neighborhood, and I'd invite my neighborhood friends that didn't go to our church, and we'd go caroling together and sing all kinds of songs from, you know, the Jingle Bells to Oh Holy Night, and that was pretty cool. I invite their kids to Young Life events because that's kind of a thing I can do, but I try not to get weird about it. I don't treat them like they're my project. Eventually, 10 of them, remember that Blondo family camp? I got to invite them to a Young Life family camp, and I think I have a picture of that. So there's 10 of my neighborhood family friends, and I'm in that stage, so I know a lot of families, and we get along. But we got to bring them there. Some of those families have come to church, maybe on Easter or Christmas and things, so it happens. But it happens pretty naturally, and it happens naturally when they know me and I know them, and they might even already know some people that go to my church. And we have normal conversations that include God and all other aspects of life. And then it's like, yeah, why wouldn't they come? Come check it out. I'm going to go just to the next slide. And another way to say it, what about getting them to church? Well, what if they were your church? What if you just twist that? And I don't mean give up your church. That's not what I'm saying. But just imagine what you think about how you want to interact with people at church. What if you just interacted with the people around you like that all the time? What if they were your church in that way? And if this is an idea, this whole neighborhood thing, or like just getting to know the people around you is really, you know, if that's clicking for you, here's a fun resource for you, livinggodspeed.org. There's a little video on that. You could go check it out. But there's Paul's thoughts for us. And I've shared a little bit about my context, and I'm going to throw it out to you. What about your context? Who is your neighbor? And I live in a neighborhood that's pretty classic suburbia. You might not. That might be where you live. You might live in the dorms here. But you have neighbors. Who's your neighbor? And are you spending time in your neighborhood? What would that look like? I encourage you, as you do, be attentive to God's good all around you, everywhere. Be normal, don't be weird. Be weird in the normal ways. I'm going to finish with a benediction to read this back to you again. With a couple liberal edits. So, friends of UCM, devote yourselves to prayer, being watchful and thankful. And pray for me too, that God may open the door from our message, that I may proclaim the mystery of Christ, for which I live in my neighborhood. Pray that I may proclaim it clearly as I should. Be wise in the way you act toward outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. Amen.